Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Fixed Interests. My name is Justin Patry, a senior director at Fitch Ratings, and today I am joined by Megan Neenan, managing director and head of U.S. non-bank financial institution ratings. Megan and her team helped to lead Fitch's coverage of the rapidly expanding world of private credit, and that's precisely what we're here to talk about today. So welcome, Megan. To start off just quickly with a very big question, but a simple one, hopefully, what is private credit and why has this emerged as such a big topic in financial markets over the past few years?
Thanks, Justin. It's unfortunately not a simple answer, but there's a variety of definitions for private credit. But in the broadest sense, it's any extension of credit outside the banking sector. And we've seen a lot of reports have tried to size the market. So anywhere between $1.5 trillion to $1.9 trillion, somewhere in that range. But I think when people talk about private credit, for the most part, what they're referring to is direct lending, which is corporate cash flow lending. So that part of the market is about $540 billion, according to PitchBook. So private credit has received a lot of attention recently, but in truth, it's been around for a really long time. Business development companies, which we rate, were created in the 1980s by Congress, and they were created really to provide credit to the middle market. And Fitch has had ratings on that sector since 2005. But I think it's getting increased focus just given the rapid growth in recent years. And Preqin is actually forecasting private credit to grow to $2.8 trillion by 2028. So it's definitely going to stay top of mind for people.
So that brings me to my next question is why has private credit grown so rapidly recently or in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think it's grown for a number of reasons. And I think it was really first kickstarted by the great financial crisis. So we saw increased regulations coming out on the banks, including higher capital requirements. There were leveraged loan limits. So specifically, they couldn't, extend credit with leverage above 6x. So we really saw a lot of different providers within the private credit space expand to fill the gap. And BDC formation coming out of the GFC was really significant. Additionally, we saw credit arms of some of the bigger alternative investment managers expand considerably. Like Blackstone, for example, their credit segment had less than $10 billion of fee-earning AUM in 2007. That ballooned to $106 billion by 2019. Another driver has really been the low interest rate environment. So there's been, a big search for yield by investors, and you get an illiquidity premium in the private credit space. And that's really attracted a lot more investors to the space. So pension funds, endowments, sovereign wealth funds, insurance companies, et cetera. And what we've also seen is just the development of product for retail investors, which is kind of a huge untapped market. And one of those big ones has been the creation of the perpetual BDC in January of 2021 by Blackstone Private Credit Fund. So that fund alone raised about $32 billion of assets in a year. And so we've seen a lot more folks try to follow suit and create their own perpetual BDCs. I think more recently, we saw some disruption in the banking sector, getting hung with some syndicated loans in late 2022, and then some bank failures in the early part of 2023. And so again, that gave a lot more private credit providers some space to expand and fill the gap. And we saw really a huge step up in deals that were done over $1 billion in size. And that's been able to be done because I think sponsors are just getting more and more comfortable with private credit solutions. They can get certainty of close, or dealing with one lender, one document. They don't have to worry about pricing, flex, and things like that. And so I think they've just gotten more comfortable. So I think there has been really a structural shift in the market that's here to stay.
I'd like to dive further into U.S. non-bank financial institutions, since that's the area that you have a particular expertise in. What have been some of the trends that you've noticed in, that are worth remarking upon in, you mentioned BDCs or other subsectors in non-bank financial institutions in the U.S.?
Yeah, it's a timely question because we actually completed our peer review on BDCs just on March 26. And this is a sector that we often use as a proxy for private credit performance and trends just more broadly. So in terms of trends, we did certainly start to see a shift from what many had deemed the most attractive underwriting environment in the history of direct lending to really a much more competitive environment towards the end of 2023. So M&A volume was pretty light last year, and those that were looking to deploy capital in the market increased. And so we saw competition in the space intensify, and that certainly started to have an impact on spreads. So we saw spreads tighten towards the end of that last year, and I think we expect that trend to continue in 2024. In terms of volume, origination activity in the BDC sector was down about 21% for the rated universe in 2023, and that number grows to 44% if I include BCRED in that calculation. So, and that's really just a reflection of the M&A environment being pretty light last year. We did see volume start to pick up as we got towards the end of 2023. And we are expecting a gradual increase this year. But I think one of the wild cards is the election, right? So I think there's some debate about whether there'll be a pull forward in activity before that happens or not. So I think that's a little bit of a wait and see. And then I think lastly, on the asset quality front, I mean, given elevated rates and a more challenging macro backdrop, we did expect credit deterioration in private credit in 2022. It just didn't materialize. And most of 2023 was pretty stable as well. We started to see some deterioration toward the end of last year. And average losses of the rated BDC universe was about 1% in 2023. And that compared to actually net gains of 10 basis points the year before. But I think the bigger kind of picture is that we're starting to see more differentiation. So of the 23 BDCs we rate, we saw a range of 10 basis points of gains to 2.9% of losses. So same can be said on the non-accrual front as well. So definitely expecting to see some continued deterioration in asset quality this year, but certainly nothing to the extent that we saw during the GFC.
Now, regulators have certainly begun to take more notice of private credit, and particularly the growth in private credit. What are some trends that you're on the lookout here or that the regulators are taking notice of?
Sure. Well, I think transparency is definitely a common topic. And it's true that there is limited transparency in the private credit space as a whole. But BDCs are actually very transparent. They have to mark their portfolio to fair value on a quarterly basis. And in their schedule of investments and their public filings, they have to list every single investment that they have in their portfolio, the cost basis, the fair value, the yield, the maturity. And certainly that's a lot more transparent than what you see on bank financial statements. But you know, kind of overall, there certainly is not as much transparency. And so I think the Fed in particular is looking for more transparency from the banks so they can get their heads around what kind of exposure do the banks have to the non-bank sector so they can help kind of size that and get some more intel into what's happening in the non-bank space. You know, I think the other thing that regulators are focused on is insurance company exposure to the private credit sector. So we've seen several alternative investment managers tie themselves up with insurance companies. So we've seen some buy insurance companies outright, like you have Apollo and Athene or KKR and Global Atlantic. And then you have some other firms that have minority stakes in insurance companies. And so I think there's just some more scrutiny from a regulatory perspective in terms of what is the liquidity of those assets? How much exposure do they have to private credit? And is the regulation kind of keeping pace with that? And I think insurance regulators so far are also focused on transparency and getting some increased disclosures around that. And I think the last theme maybe that we see a lot more of is just the focus on retail exposure and retail interest in the private credit space. So you're seeing a lot more development of semi-liquid products that are specifically designed for retail investors. And there's always going to be the question of suitability. Do retail investors kind of know what they're buying? Do they understand the illiquidity of the product that they're investing in?
Final question. And now I know you cover non-bank financial institutions specifically, but you know, have you had any conversations with colleagues in other sectors about the rapid growth and scale of scaling up of private credit, about second order effects that, you know, have caught your attention that people are discussing here at Fitch?
Certainly. It seems like private credit is a topic that we talk about every day. You know, I think the interconnectedness, though, is not something that we saw during the subprime mortgage crisis, right? So in terms of contagion, these are really direct relationships between a lender and a buyer. There's not mark-to-market funding that's widespread in the private credit space. There are redemption terms in some of these semi-liquid products, but those redemption terms are typically capped. So it feels like it's more manageable than what we've seen in prior crises. But some of the things that we do think about is certainly the bank team is probably focused on exposure to non-bank lending. And so a BDC, for example, will have a syndicated corporate credit revolver that's provided by banks. They might have bilateral agreement with banks. STVs provided by banks. And so with the Fed pushing for more disclosure there, I think the bank team is certainly focused on kind of what those exposures are. I would say the regional banks seem to be pulling back a little bit, just given some of the issues that are present in commercial real estate. And the bigger banks remain pretty actively involved. But from a size perspective, you know, it's a relatively small part of what they're doing. And then the other thing, which I touched on already, is insurance. And I think our insurance team is focused on life insurers in particular and what kind of exposure they have to private credit. So level three assets in particular, which tend to be less liquid. Our insurance team published a report not too long ago and said that for the life insurers in the rated universe that are tied up with the alternative investment managers, they have about 19% exposure to level three investments. And that compares to about 5% on average for insurance companies or life insurers specifically that don't have a tie up with an alt-IM. So those are some of the things that I think some of the other groups are focused on as well.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Megan, for coming on Fixed Interests and sharing your thoughts on private credit. That's it for this edition of our podcast. To learn more about all of Fitch's ratings and our credit views, please visit fitchratings.com. See you next time.